Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Now imagine Anthony Albanese, Angus Taylor, Pauline Hanson suddenly launching into a bit of poetry as they tried to make their political arguments. Perhaps even poetry they'd penned themselves. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. It is kind of hard to imagine though, isn't it? Now, I wonder if you heard that during his recent visit to China, Russia's President Vladimir Putin dusted off some ancient Chinese poetry to address China's leader Xi Jinping. He said, "Not seeing you for one day feels like being apart for three autumns." It's very sweet, isn't it? Japan's Emperor Hirohito, he loved a good poem too. He wrote hundreds. A famous story has it, in fact, that Hirohito recited a poem that had been written by his grandfather to his military chiefs of staff in September 1941 as an appeal for peace and diplomacy just prior to the Pearl Harbor attacks. And this poem went, "Across the four seas, all men are brothers. In such a world, why do the waves rage? The winds roar." Well, it's hard to imagine our current crop of Aussie pollies getting into poetry, but in fact, Australia has a rich history of poet politicians, particularly during the Federation era. Now, whether the poetry was any good is another question. We're going to explore some of it now with Dr. Thomas Ford. He's from La Trobe University. He's actually in the middle of researching and I think writing a book about Australian poetry in the colonial era. Hello, Tom. Welcome.
Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for having me.
Now, it's kind of funny to imagine because I don't think poetry is very much in most people's everyday lives these days. But what was it like in 19th century Australia, particularly when it came to public discourse?
Yeah, well, poetry, I guess most people today wouldn't think of poets as being particularly influential, powerful people, maybe not as being particularly famous people in many cases. But in the 19th century, things were quite different. Probably one of the most famous people in the entire century was Byron, a poet, famous for his, you know, his poetry as for his personality. Obviously, you know, they didn't have radio as we're talking now. They didn't have television. There was no cinema. It was very much a print universe. I think poetry had a kind of centrality, a kind of power in the public sphere. It's hard to recapture and imagine now. But it was the case that when people wanted to make a political point, or people wanted to intervene, or if people just felt that they had something to say in public, poetry was often the medium that they turned to.
Yeah, and so it was quite common, wasn't it, to find poetry in newspapers?
Oh, yes. So in Australia, in the 19th century, colonial Australia, there were many more newspapers than we have today. The major cities would have, you know, 5-10 newspapers, often with morning and afternoon editions. Quite small towns would often have two newspapers competing for copy and for readers. And basically all of them had a poet's corner or columns of poetry that they would publish, and a lot of it was original. So there was a great deal of poetry being written and published and read, in the newspapers of the country.
So if we turn to some of the 19th century Australian politicians, quite a few of them were poets. Many of them were also journalists and men of letters. Was it just the upper classes who were into writing poetry in a big way, or would it have been across the board?
Oh, no, it was. So, I mean, I guess the people who had, who say would have been editing newspapers, they would obviously would have had a kind of fairly educated background, or people often who were running for parliament, making those kinds of political careers. Often they also had a kind of legal background too. So there was kind of easy movement between a kind of, you know, writing, law, political sphere. But it wasn't the case that only, people who had been to university or people who had a kind of upper class, I guess, background were writing poetry. So a lot of the kind of prominent politicians in the colonial period in Australia wrote poetry, but you find poems also in all kinds of other places. So you might know the Girildary letter that Ned Kelly, he doesn't write it, he dictates it, I think, to Joe Byrne, one of his one of the other people in the Kelly gang. And there are lines in that letter where he just starts quoting a ballad, a convict ballad, about the various I guess places of penal servitude in New South Wales. And so, yeah, the convicts, obviously, they had traditions of, you know, poets and ballads and songs that they invented and shared, and that those traditions continued all the way through to someone like Ned Kelly, who could still remember those lines and quote them in his letter, his kind of manifesto, where he set out his case.
Now, look, I stand corrected potentially about modern pollies. My texter says that Peter Malinauskas, the South Australian Premier, read a lengthy Lawson poem as part of his most recent victory speech.
Lawson, though, of course, is a 19th century poet for the most part. And I think when George Brandis was the Attorney General, so this is a few years ago now, maybe five years or so, a few more, I think there was a Senate estimates where to kind of, I don't know, indicate his lack of interest in the, you know, the questions that were being asked. He pulled out a book of Banjo Paterson's poems and kind of read it in a performative manner. So you do see poetry, I guess, still get a little bit invoked in the political world today.
Yeah, I don't know if Peter Malinauskas tries his hand at writing it. But look, the first example that we've got to talk about tonight is Henry Parkes. He's very well known for his 1889 Tenterfield Oration, a speech that seemingly kind of sparked the movement towards federation. He put poetry into this very famous address. So tell us about it, Tom.
Yeah, well, Henry Parkes, he was, I guess this is towards the end of what at that point was a very long career in colonial politics. I think he'd been the Premier of New South Wales three or four times by this period and had been the kind of leading political figure for decades. So he gives this speech at Tenterfield in 1889 that's generally seen as the kind of moment that really catalyses the push for federation that takes about then, I guess, 10, 12 years before the Parliament first sits. But this is his kind of like call to the people to unite all the different colonies into one nation, and he runs through a few reasons why he thinks it would be good for, you know, New South Wales and Victoria and South Australia and Queensland and so on all to join together into a single nation. One of the reasons he gives is that is a kind of national security idea that they would have a better defence system if they were all joined together. But it's a little bit hard to he has some trouble making that case because on the one hand there was no obvious threat that, you know, that they're trying to defend against, and for the most part they were just relying on the British Navy really. Maybe sensing that his defence argument isn't a particularly strong argument, he falls back on poetry and quotes a long poem, I think, by James Brunton Stephens. It's about the Dominion of Australia, it's called, which was one of a lot of poets writing these kinds of poems at the time, but they're patriotic hymns, I guess, in a way, kind of invoking an Australia, a nation that doesn't yet exist, but they're kind of calling it into being. And this for Parkes was, this poem, I guess, was the kind of best reason he could come up with for the various colonies to federate into a nation. And it seems to have worked, I guess.
read a bit of it for us, if you wouldn't mind, Tom.
I think you mentioned just in your lead up that these poems may not be great. And I'll leave it to your listeners to make their own. Their own decisions about that, but this is how it ends. So he's like calling on the idea is that Australia, there's a kind of it's a predestined thing that the nation will come. It hasn't come yet, but it's going to happen. And it ends like this: not yet her day. How long? Not yet. There comes her flush of violet. and heavenward faces all aflame with sanguine imminence of morn, wait but the sun's kiss to proclaim the day of the dominion born. That is the dominion of Australia.
Right.
So, yes, so it's all kind of this very rosy dawn image, the nation coming into being.
So that was Henry Parkes read that one. That was written by James Brunton Stevens. I've got Dr. Tom Ford with me from La Trobe University. Now, Edmund Barton, who was our first PM, he gave a lot of pro-Federation speeches, and he had a particular poem that he liked to recite at the end of his, didn't he?
Yeah, he would often pull out a poet called Philip J. Holdsworth, who wrote a federal sonnet. And again, I feel like I should apologise a little bit for imposing this kind of inflicting this kind of poetry on your listeners. But this is how this Philip J. Holdsworth's federal sonnet ended. League love must dome this heritage of ours, lest hate that stings and envy that devours cloud our clear air or taint our austral strand. Anathema be all but this decree, in union one we claim one destiny.
Yeah, it hasn't aged very well, has it?
No, it's a kind of, I guess, a kind of high Victorian language. It's very meant to be very stirring, very kind of noble and patriotic, but I guess maybe we live in slightly more cynical times. I think most people today would find this a little hard to stomach. But it was very popular at the time. You know, I think it really did play an important role in inspiring people with the idea of federation.
Now, the last line of that poem that you read us, Tom, in Union One, we claim one destiny. Now, that picks up from a federation slogan, which was One People, One Destiny. That was from another poem, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And this one, this is a slight peculiarity. So this is from a woman called the Countess of Jersey, and I guess that's an important reminder that it wasn't just men of letters who were writing this kind of hyper-political poetry. But that, I guess, poetry's kind of central political role or its capacity to inspire people politically meant that women who in most colonies in the kind of late 1880s, 1890s, the end of the 19th century, were still excluded from formal political participation, but many of them used poetry as a way of kind of playing a role in the political process. The Countess of Jersey, writing a political poem. She also happened to be the wife of the governor of New South Wales. And I guess that's something else to say, is that even though she's he's come out from the Britain to be the governor of New South Wales, but that doesn't stop her signing up, I guess, to a kind of Australian nationalist federation project. So her poem ends, their queen, and that's Queen Victoria here. Their queen has the keys of an empire to keep where sets and where rises the sun. Their brothers, her wardens, are lords of the deep. One people, their destiny one. So the one people there, it's actually kind of the Australian people and the British people are one people, but that one people, their destiny one, gets picked up as a federation slogan. One people, one destiny.
Now, Tom, you reckon there were literally thousands of these kinds of poems and hymns written in the second half of the 19th century. So it was all the rage to kind of write pro-Federation, patriotic poetry. Was Advance Australia Fair part of that group of poems that were written at that time?
Yeah, obviously a lot of these are poems. They're also songs. People are publishing songs, writing music to these lyrics in many cases. And our national anthem, Advance Australia Fair, is probably the only poem of this, what was a very popular kind of genre in the time. It's probably the only one that people will know today. But some of its kind of strange peculiarities, you know, the line "girt by sea," which sounds a bit weird, like that word "girt," they often like to, often these poems talk about Australia as being kind of, you know, set off an island in the sea. It's completely surrounded by sea, girdled by sea. That becomes a kind of common theme in the. So yes, if you know the words of the national anthem, and I realise that not everyone probably can recite the words of the national anthem, but you'll have had a little bit of a flavour of this kind of poetry.
All right, we are having some more suggestions of Pollies who have indulged in some poetry. George in South Australia says, Don Dunstan, the South Australian, when Premier, he danced on the stage at Her Majesty's Theatre and read poetry during a festival performance at the zoo, apparently from the back of an elephant.
That's right. That I didn't know that. Amazing.
Well, I mean, if you're going to put any Polly up to that, then I guess Don Dunstan's a fair candidate. Mick from Trundle reckons that Bob Catter likes to spruik Homer and ancient Greek.
Wow. Again, I wasn't aware of that either. I'm going to have to check that one out too. I should say, just when you were in your little introduction, when you mentioned, I think it was Putin reading a poem for Xi Jinping. So when Xi Jinping came to Australia, and I think they had an event at the Parliament to kind of recognise his visit, and Tony Abbott, who I think was Prime Minister at the time, gave a speech, and in that speech he quoted a poem by a Chinese poet called Liang Qichao, who was also a politician, another of these kind of politician poet people. He was a reformer in China in the late 19th, early 20th century. And he had actually been exiled from China, I think in about 1899 or so, and came to Australia and wrote some poems in Australia that were published in Chinese language newspapers here. And I don't know who on Tony Abbott's staff managed to track this down or find this out, but they found one of these poems that's about this, you know, Chinese poet, politician, reformer person that he'd written in Australia about his visit to Australia, that was published in a Chinese language newspaper in Australia, and they translated it, and he read some of it out for Xi Jinping's visit here.
So once we start looking, the poetry is popping up in our political life even today. Now, I'm going to jump to this bit because I want to make sure that we don't miss it, because Henry Parkes wrote a poem about a terrorist. Tell us about this poem, which is called The Beauteous Terrorist.
Yeah, so Henry Parkes, I think I mentioned, so he used this poem by another poet, Brunton Stevens, as kind of one of his major reasons why he thought Federation was a good idea. But Parkes was himself a really prolific poet. He published 6 volumes of poetry during his life. And I think the last one he published, or maybe it was the second last, the whole volume is called The Beauteous Terrorist. And the longest poem in it, The Beauteous Terrorist, was this long, fairly erotic poem about a Russian revolutionary, a woman called Sofia Petrovskaya, who had kind of masterminded the assassination of Tsar Alexander II, right? So I think he was assassinated in 1881. And a couple of years later, Henry Parkes wrote this long poem that really goes into like how pretty this Russian revolutionary is. And kind of also awards her a role as almost like an honorary Australian, because I guess she's a kind of freedom fighter. But yeah, she was also a political assassin. And you know, I think you said at the start, it's hard to imagine some of our politicians writing poetry today. I think it's really hard to imagine, say, any politicians writing a poem called like The Beautiful Terrorist,
and with it also having a faintly erotic
like
touch,
an assassin.
Goodness me. I've got Dr. Tom Ford here from La Trobe University, who's very interested in some of the poetry in Australian politics and in Australian history, particularly around the Federation era. We've only got about 3 minutes left. I did just want to point out, too, that sometimes if people were having political debates, Tom, there were debates that went back and forward in newspapers, weren't there, in which people would you know, make a case for something, and people would respond also in verse.
Yeah, so I guess mostly what I've been talking about here has been this kind of like patriotic, almost like hymns, you know, this very kind of stirring, noble, you know, one nation, one destiny kind of poetry. But probably most of the poetry that was written in Australia in the 19th century that were written and published, and certainly most of the political poetry was often comic satire, and you would usually be making fun of you know, your enemies, basically. So, yeah, you would have newspapers tended to be more politically aligned than they are now, even more politically aligned. So you'd have kind of dueling newspapers that would have opposing political positions, and each of them would have their poets who would fight with each other and kind of write back to each other. contesting or mocking the positions of the other side.
Yeah. Now, maybe we've got time just quickly to read one of Robert Lowe's. He later became UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, but he wrote a series of pro-squatter satires called Songs of the Squatters, if you could perhaps read a bit for us.
Yeah. So, yes, he was a young man in Australia in the 1840s when the squatters were rising to power, and he was on the side of the squatters, edited the squatter newspaper, The Atlas, and wrote a bunch of squatter songs where the squatters are kind of, you know, sad, but people worthy of our, I guess, you know, respect and sympathy because they have such a tough life. And I think some of these are actually quite good. We've had a lot of bad poetry, but I think some of
Robert
Lowe's...
Yeah, we better get on with it quickly, though, okay. Or the news will beat us.
So in this one, he's trying to woo his bride. He's trying to encourage his bride to come and live with him in the bush. And he writes things like, "My door has no hinge, the window no pane. They let out the smoke, but they let in the rain. The frying pan serves us for table and dish, and the tin pot of tea stands still filled for your wish. The sugar is brown, the milk is all done, but the stick it is stirred with is better than none."
Very good. Tom, we probably could read bad colonial poetry, although that was all right, for many hours to come, but let's not. Thank you so much for joining us and just giving us a taste of the poetry that our politicians were speaking about and even writing back in the day.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
That's Dr. Tom Ford. He's with La Trobe University. He's very interested in looking at the way that our political and poetic history is tied up together.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.